So we had last time long introduction to the series. The name of the series is Transformation, Transforming Life into a Spiritual Quest. In our previous sessions, I shared with you a few stories, live stories, you know, that how just we go on living, sometimes mindlessly, sometimes carelessly, sometimes we just adopt a lifestyle where we flatly speaking, we fool ourselves, we lie to ourselves. We hide from the reality which we know quite well. The result is that we create conflict with our conscience, and conflict with the conscience creates inner unrest. In that restless space inside us, it becomes very difficult to live peacefully. State of tranquility and restlessness do not go together. And in order to live a happy, healthy life, first thing that we need to achieve or cultivate is a peaceful mind, which you will see a little later in Bhagavad Gita itself, that happiness requires a fertile ground of peacefulness. And that peaceful state comes from tyagat. Tyaga means by letting things go, especially things which are not useful. Tyagat shanti. That is the criteria we must cultivate. That is a state of equanimity, stillness, and on that foundation, then automatically, then it's very easy for us to build the state of cheerfulness. And it is only in a state of cheerfulness, when you have cultivated a cheerful mind, we are able to function in a healthy way. And it is in that regard I have told you a few stories about myself being with a very, very accomplished yogi who, despite his sadhana, almost 7-8 hours a day, used to sit in his meditation in japa, and he was living in such a wonderful place at a shrine in Allahabad, and yet deep down he was so fearful. It took time for me to understand why was he so fearful. In order to achieve freedom from fear, in order to achieve freedom from doubt, in order to cultivate confidence in oneself, in order to cultivate trust in divine providence, we are told to do practices, sadhana. He was doing all great, great practices, and yet I found that there was something missing in him. One day it became very clear that yes, he was, because he was living with a very conflicting philosophy. He believed in something else, taught something else, acted something differently. Therefore, he was simultaneously in 2, 3, 4 different boats and still trying to reach the other shore. That was the problem. Then his teacher I visited in Varanasi, which I talked to you. His name itself was Tyagiji, the great renunciate. And yet I found that how conflicting was his own worldview, What was that? The worldview philosophy that he practiced and taught was that Sarvam Khalu Idam Brahma, all this is wonderful world, has directly evolved from God or the higher divinity. Ishavasyam, in each and every aspect of this world, which is inside us, which is outside us, the divine being resides. And yet, he was so uncomfortable living in this world because it was just a product of Maya, pure illusion, source of misery. And all that thing he had focused on, this whole philosophy of so-called illusoriness, ugliness that was in the world, all that was focused on only two things in his mind, that women are the source of misery and money is the source of misery. And yet, life is such, including the life of an ashram, life of a renunciate monk, where you cannot just survive, you cannot just live without these two. You need basic infrastructure of your monastery, if you are living in a monastery, that requires money, resources. You need food, you need shelter, you need clothes. Then, whether you are monk, married, unmarried, brahmachari, celibate, etc. But you cannot just isolate yourself or disconnect yourself from the fundamental reality that one day you are born from a mother. When you were born, automatically with birth came a mother, a father. Perhaps you had some siblings. And even though you have renounced the world, and yet in your memory, in your mind, you still carry a world made of relationships, your friends, and all that pain and pleasure, good and bad, right and wrong, that goes with you. They are not just, they have not gone away. They are there. On top of that, there is a human part of you. Even though you are a monk, suppose if you are saying that, yes, I'm going to live in such solitude where I really am going to abide with my this philosophy of absolute uninvolvement with money, worldly resources, and human contact. You cannot do that. So living in a monastery, and as a man, his mind was so stuck with women being the source of his misery and the misery of all men. And in fact, it was so strongly ingrained in him that always he thought about only the welfare of and goodness of and health and well-being of enlightenment of only men. It looked like women are not even living beings. Just you can imagine with this kind of philosophy, how can a human being ever have a peaceful mind? And if a human being doesn't have peaceful mind, how is that human being going to be happy? And if a human being is not happy, then how can that human being think, speak, and act in a healthy way? Happiness is very, very powerful. You will not be enthusiastic even to live. Living life without love for life, living life without having some respect for it, is automatically bondage. You know? So, I saw it. Therefore, that's why I used those examples, you know, as a direct reminder that what is there that we need in order to transform life into a spiritual quest. Very first thing is cultivate a philosophy of life and really stick to it properly and with honesty, you know, with honesty. Don't try to cheat, you know, fool yourself, and don't try to lie to yourself. Fooling and lying to yourself is far more serious problem than fooling and lying to others. In fact, if you form a habit of fooling and lying to yourself, then definitely you will not be able to stop fooling and lying to others. That is the summary of what we did last time. Now comes our very first session in that sequence. Maintaining equanimity, key to success. And I'm taking it from Bhagavad Gita chapter 2 and verses 247, in fact, I'll say one more verse, let us add, 247 through 53. 247, it's a very beautiful verse. It tells us how to attain a state of equanimity, peacefulness. First, by understanding this verse, 247, which is karmaṇi eva adhikāraste mā phaleṣu kadācana mā karma phal heturbhur mā te saṅgostva karmaṇi. This is the verse 47. Karmaṇi eva adhikāraste. Remember and try to maintain the awareness constantly of this fact. What is that fact? Fact is, karmaṇevādhikāraste. You have the power and privilege of performing your actions. This is number one thing to remember. And maintain this awareness. Yes, as a human being, I'm very privileged. I have power and privilege an opportunity to perform my actions. What about other creatures, other living beings? Yes, they have too, but in a very limited field. Their actions are normally very limited. They have limited goals and objectives, and their actions are most of the times are geared toward obtaining food, safety, security, procreation, and fear. Fear means fear of protecting their life. That is the kind of guiding principles behind their all actions. Food, procreation, food, hunger driven food, procreation, and what else? Fear, and due to the fear also self-preservation. Human beings have little bit more than that. All these things to a great degree are regulated by nature, and yet there is a great deal of freedom. So even though food is there, but we have a brain and mind designed in a way that we can decide when to eat, what to eat, and how much to eat. There are 20, 30 different kinds of raw ingredients or cooked ingredients, fully prepared ingredients, all of them are there. Everything is ready, and yet we feel that it's not the time to have lunch. Lunch is served, lunch is there in the kitchen, fully served, or let's say ready, by 11:30. Or let's say lots of other kinds of foods are sitting there in the fridge. So many different kinds of fully ripe fruits are hanging on the tree. And yet, we have some discernment in our mind which makes us decide, should I eat all these fruits, all these food, vegetables, all these different kinds of foods right now or little later, or just part of it, only in this much amount? Okay. This privilege is not there among many other creatures. First thing, nature has imposed certain limitations on their diet. So when if you give a long lecture, or let's say a very, very, even if there is a way of communicating with lions or tigers, that why a tiger should eat a broader range of food, probably it will be very difficult for lion to comprehend it. You had just eaten, Mr. Lion, you just had eaten 150 pounds of meat yesterday. Don't eat now. This eating and not eating more is totally regulated by nature. If he's hungry, he will eat. He will not really think too much. Even when we are hungry, still our power of discrimination has not completely been affected by our hunger. Whereas in the case of other creatures, it is affected. Similarly, during the mating season, they almost have no control over themselves. They fight. They get injured, you know. Sometimes even they die. Whereas in our case, much more different. Similarly, fear. If they are afraid of certain things, and that fear is somehow due to the design of their essential nature, it is there, in fact, that fear is probably the thing that helps them stay alive, protect themselves. That's how they react, that's how they interact, that's how they respond to the situations. It's the fear-driven. So, what here is very important to understand, that karma nevadhikara. This scripture is telling, if you want to be happy, understand that you have much, much more greater degree of power and privilege to perform your actions. This power and privilege automatically includes your ability to know what to do, when to do, to what extent to do. And based on that knowledge and understanding, you must perform your actions. But ma phaleshu kadachana. But when it comes to the results, you must tell yourself that there are many, many, many factors together which bring forward the fruits of your actions. You are a very intelligent person. You are very discerning. You are wise and successful. You have great amount of patience. And you have used your entire logic and reason. And you have put together all the facts needed to determine whether or not the way you are planning to perform your actions and the way you are executing your actions will help you succeed in achieving your goal. You have done it. And yet, you may or may not succeed achieving the goal exactly the way you have envisioned. Because, let's say if you are a farmer, or you are a writer, you are a professor, you are a doctor, you are a businessman, you are a lawyer, and in your field you are very good, you have all the great qualities to succeed, and you have made the best use of all those qualities. And yet, certain things are not under your control. Everything is going very, very well. You are going to attend extremely decisive meeting and your connecting flight was in Chicago. Chicago airport was chaotic. you missed your flight. By the time you rearranged your meeting, some other party had already intervened. And your entire project, which you were working on, and you were very close to the decisive stage, just got hijacked. Okay. You did everything that was within your capacity, power and privilege. And when it came to the result of it, this unforeseen thing was not part of your execution. It just happened. Okay. You are a lawyer. You are working for a client. You had tried your best to have all the facts. You had done everything. And, you know, to dig all the information that you needed to make sure that you know everything about your client and about your client's case. And your client was very, what you call, honest. Based on that client's truthfulness and truth-based facts which were perfectly in the favor of your client, it was almost predictable that your client is going to win the case. No, you are going to win the case for your client. What you did not know, that the client and his wife lately have become almost like each other's enemy. And your client did not know what his wife was hiding. Out of anger, just a day before the trial in the court, wife handed over so-called those journals, all those evidences, which neither you knew as a lawyer nor your client knew, and nothing has been there in the discovery process. Now that kind of fact just reaches there, and you go there as a brightest, one of the brightest lawyer, attorney. You stand in the courtroom and now suddenly look like stupid. You are intelligent. You are honest. You have done everything you yourself had done. Your own, what you call, entire interview, even before you took that client as your client. And still your client is every, you know, honest person, good person. Nothing has changed. And yet, circumstances got changed. Everything. In whole town, now everybody is talking that what kind of stupid lawyer you are. Same judge who is your own buddy in your golf. Almost every Sunday or Saturday you have been playing golf with that judge. That judge is thinking, totally puzzled, and you are so embarrassed that for next many, many months, almost for next 6 months, one whole year, you even didn't have the courage to go and play golf, you know, in your friend circle. You know that your client is on the right path, his case is right. Now, what can you do? How are you going to retain your own equilibrium That is why here it says, karmaneva adhikaraste. Remind yourself constantly, consistently that you have all the power and privilege to perform your actions and must not become negligent in terms of doing what you are supposed to do. And at the same time, ma phaleshu kadachana. Do not become so dependent on your pre-assessed goal, objective. Be prepared to enjoy the outcome, no matter what that outcome is. Ma karma phal, that's why third pada, the third quarter of the verse says, ma karma phal hetur bhu. Do not become too fixated on the fruits of your actions. But it does not mean that you do not invest. No. Your entire mind and heart into performing your actions skillfully and wisely. Don't become careless. Do everything that you can do in order to perform the actions which you find so important. But don't become so fixated on the fruits of your actions. Ma karo phal hetur bhu. How can you do that? That is, mate sangosta karmani. How can you do that? By reminding yourself that you are a human being. Surrendering yourself to inertia, inaction, is not part of your natural constitution. Nature has not designed you to be an inert fellow. Nature has not designed you just to sit and watch the destiny to do what, to do whatever it wishes to do and not to do which it does not wish to do. That is not you. That rule applies to the species other than humans. There has been a great deal of debate regarding surrender, trustful surrender. I have heard people talking, I have surrendered myself, now I do not worry. But it is very, very difficult to know whether you are really honest with yourself at that time when you see that you have surrendered yourself and now it is totally in the hands of God and you have no reason to worry. It's very difficult to know that you really, do you really know what you are saying? If you really know what you are saying, then all the worries are over. And the test of the fact that you are really beyond all worries will be when the result comes in. As long as the result is not there, you can say all those things, but when the result comes in, then that is the real time of the test. So there is a beautiful phrase. For the last 500-700 years at least, people have been using to justify their inertia, carelessness, or to exploit the idea of trustful surrender to God or providence. That phrase is अजगर करे न चाकरी, पंछी करे न काम, दास मलूका कही गए सबके दाता राम। So there was a saint around 600 years ago. His name was Maluka, Maluk Das. He was born not too far away from Allahabad, Maluk Das. So he wrote passages describing his experiences or documenting his belief system and his teachings. But it has been case with many such teachers and preachers and books and scriptures even written, that as time passes, people keep interpolating their own ideas and they keep dumping the name of the original teachers. So similarly here, the passage is Ajgar kare na chakari, a python does not apply for jobs anywhere. No, it doesn't work for anyone. No, it doesn't do anything. And panchi kare na kaam, similarly, a bird doesn't make any plan. None of them are concerned about their future, and yet look at, they live as long as they are supposed to live, and perhaps they live better life than humans do. So who is the real protector and provider and the guide? God. He became very popular, or he was very popular. So I don't know whether he really wrote it, or someone, you know, after his passing, somebody wrote and put his name in it. But this has become a tendency. That we just simply become careless. And we call our lack of interest, lack of our engagement, or maybe even our tendency of despondency, as surrender to God, which supposedly confers upon us a great gift of worrylessness. So here Bhagavad Gita is saying that Mate Sango Vasto Karmani, make sure that you don't talk and behave under the influence of your own sloth, inertia, carelessness. Make sure that what you are saying and what you are doing is not an expression of your own tendency of fooling yourself and bluffing yourself, fooling others and bluffing yourself. Try your best to do what, according to your current state of knowledge and understanding, comprehension and power of discernment, seems to be the right thing to do. However, do it in a manner, do it with complete understanding that even though you have power and privilege to perform your actions, and yet you do not have complete control over the results of your actions. There are hundreds and hundreds of strands of causes together which lead to the fruition of one action. This is what exactly it has been described in the Yoga Sutra, Chapter 2, Sutra 3. Okay. That there are amazing, amazing things happen in life, happen in our own mind and heart, that we do not know exactly how they are just happening there. There is an amazing force behind our any action and its fruition. And that is extremely subtle. When and how, in what circumstance, a subtle thought comes in our mind regarding performing certain actions. It is so subtle that at the moment when that thought is coming, we are not aware of it. It is only when it has already touched and thus triggered the movement of our subtle tendencies, which are there in three broad categories sitting there, sattva, rajas, and tamas. Somewhat very clear, somewhat very cloudy, unclear, somewhat just in between, ready to just wildly, aimlessly, effortlessly, you know, and unconsciously just to start functioning. These are three tendencies. Tendency, which is very bright, clear, sattvic, full of illumination. Other one, totally opposite. Very vague, very unclear, you know, very cloudy, very dark. You know. And in between, there is another tendency which doesn't care whether it is right or wrong or clear or unclear. It just simply starts vibrating. When and how and why, under what circumstance, this really happens, we have no idea. It is so subtle. Unless we are really, really established in higher degree of inner stability, clarity, which is called almost samadhi. Unless we have succeeded in sharpening our intellect, unless we have succeeded in making our mind become one-pointed and flowing inwardly, unless we have succeeded in bringing our mind and senses to a state of alignment, unless we have succeeded in having our thought, speech, and actions exactly on the same very page, and unless we have succeeded in discovering our own inner world without fear and without doubt, and unless we have succeeded in confronting and conquering our deeply rooted tendencies, it is very difficult to really detect the subtlest pulsation of our own vrittis, the tendencies. It is because of that we really do not have access to numberless strands which coalesce themselves in order to mature in a powerful cause, in a fully blossoming cause, leading to the fusion, leading to an effect. We do not know. And that is why we do not have much control over the fruits. Furthermore, our life is associated with so many other people's life. Even if we have so much control over our mind, thought, speech, and action, even if we have a great degree of power of discernment and the power to decide and act according to, while abiding with the light of our inner conscience, even if we have that, then what about those who are so near and dear to us, those who are our colleagues, those who are for known or unknown reasons holding grudge looking for an opportunity to drag our leg backward. What about those who for their own unique reasons are constantly, trying to find how to make sure that we fail in our endeavors? We don't have any such idea. Even though we have tried our best to rule out all those possibilities. Therefore, we must be prepared to remain unperturbed when the results of our actions finally appear. When they appear, there are only two categories of those results. Either they will be exactly the way we wanted, or they will be totally different from what we wanted. There are only two possibilities. If they happen to be exactly the way we wanted, we call it success. And if they happen to be somewhat opposite to, differently from what we wanted them to be, then we call it failure. Results are there. There is nothing like you perform an action and there is no fruit. There is no result. The only difference is whether it is desirable or not desirable. Okay. Whether it is compatible to your wishes, expectations, predictions, anticipation, or is it totally opposite to that? But it's never like there is no result of your actions. No, it's there. When it comes to us exactly the way we wanted, it creates a very unique kind of disturbance in us. Wow! Ha ha ha! Got it! And especially when the world comes to congratulate you. Wow, congratulations! I'm really glad. Wow. God knows whether those people are really glad or they are just faking, But at least that's how it goes. At that time, if you identify yourself with the results of your actions, then there are a few consequences. Number one, you are falsely claiming yourself to be super smart. At a certain level, you are embracing avidya, ignorance. Because not everything was in your hand. And you did not know that everything was in your hand or everything was not in your hand. Even you didn't know that. So a great deal of credit goes to luck, divine providence. A great deal of credit goes to those other 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 or 100 other friends and colleagues, those who worked very hard along with you. If the architect of the shrine claims credit, entire credit for himself, he will be definitely in trouble at some point, somewhere. If the engineer does that, he will be in trouble. He will be making mistake. If the contractors and subcontractors claim the whole credit for themselves, they will be in trouble. If the people, those who wrote the checks and paid all the bills, if they claim the credit, they will be making big mistake. If the board of directors, those who sat down, made the decision, they will be making a big mistake. If I claim, as a visionary that, wow, this is so wonderful, and I will be making mistake. Because so many people, so many things together, so many contributors, so many loving, generous people, those who contributed $1,000, those who contributed $50,000, those who contributed $10, those who just came to study and practice, even if they came on a scholarship, for example, still they contributed in their unique way. If there is further intensification of the energy that is at the shrine, it is only because of those who meditate there. There is great contribution, their contribution in the process of, establishment and further continuation of the, intensification of the energy shakti there. Okay, so there are so many people, so many factors, so many circumstances put together. Here comes the Sri Vidya Shrine. Not knowing this fact is called avidya, which automatically helps, or let's say contributes to the formation of an atmosphere of unrest. And in that restless, unpeaceful atmosphere, there cannot be any success story. That is what here the scripture is telling. This is the law that you have to apply in any aspect of your life. In your family life, in your business life, in your professional life, in your spiritual life. Some people have a mantra, are very happy within a matter of few days, few weeks, few months, they come to see some very fulfilling result. Others are doing it for 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 4 years. Still they are wondering whether they are on the right path or not. The reason is that so many unseen factors involved in the lives of all these different students. There are so many factors there with the same mantra, with the same breathing exercise, with same yoga, with same visualization. The unpredictable factors are far more than the predictable factors. And therefore, when success walks into your life, be careful in terms of restoring and retaining your inner stability. When failure walks into your life, be careful in terms of restoring and retaining your inner stability. And that's what this verse is telling. So, karmalnevadhikarasti ma phaleshu kadachana ma karma phalheturbhur ma te sangosta karmani. So this verse 47 is introduction to verse 48, which is the starting point of this evening's discussion. What can I do? That's how the scriptures are written. And if they were not so compact and meaningful, then they were not, they would not have been treated as scripture. They would have been treated as a God knows what. I have no idea what word to use. But they are scriptures. That's why, nobody puts a single penny into Google or Facebook to promote Bhagavad Gita. Still Bhagavad Gita is here, And God knows for how long, how long ago somebody wrote it down and still it has been passed on, No promotion, no marketing needed for Bhagavad Gita to be popular. Sanskrit is not your language. Philosophy is probably not your the major subject that you did in your university, college time. And on top of that, none of this stuff really raises the value of your company, you know, or business, and yet 20, 30, 40 of us here, and similarly, God knows how many, many more people elsewhere for thousands and thousands of years are still reading Bhagavad Gita only because it is a scripture, and a scripture got to be very, very compact, precise, and no room for, you know, further verification. That's why it's called a scripture. It is decisive knowledge. So that's why sometimes introduction itself becomes a complete book. So now let's come to our real verse of this evening's discussion, 48, chapter 2. Yogasthaha Guru Karmani Sangam Tyaktva Dhananjaya Siddhya Siddhyo Samo Bhutva Samattvam Yoga Uchyate. Yogasthaha Guru Karmani. While being established in yoga, perform your actions. Now the question is, what kind of yoga are we talking about here? Yogasthaha Guru Karmani. While being established. Yoga means here samatvam. To be established in that state of equanimity, which comes from being, having an anchor within. Yogastha. Let's say yoga itself here, for example. Whatever is your ideal, allow that ideal to be an anchor for your consciousness. We are living in an amazing world where we wish to do certain things, we wish to be in a particular way, and yet there are so many other factors out there which prevent us to live the way we want to live, act the way we want to act. We are living in an amazing world where gathering tools and means to live what seems to be the ideal way of living and being takes away so much time and energy, and hardly any time and energy left to actually use those tools and means which we gathered after working so hard. Okay? So, there is so much pressure out there from every direction for, you know, the pressure is to do something other than what we know to be the center of our life. Everybody talks about love, compassion, kindness, selfless service, etc. And we know that these things are true beyond any doubt. Whether, you know, we are Christian, Hindus, Muslims, men, women, young, old, poor, rich. There is no debate about whether or not love, understanding, kindness, compassion, forgiveness is good thing for me or not. Oh, I'm old person and Christian. I'm old fashioned Hindu. This love and compassion business is not for me. It doesn't make any sense. Nobody says that. No. I have my church, my temple. No. Or let's say, I worked very hard to become a doctor, to become a businessman. And this love stuff, compassion stuff is not for me. I am whatever I am. No. It doesn't work that way. Our conscience doesn't permit. Anything that we have earned is definitely not what we need in order to experience ourselves as a human being fully connected to our Creator, anything that we have done and accomplished does not take away our uncertainty about life hereafter, and that does not take away our fear of death, and does not make us become excited to live in the present and not be concerned about our past and future. Okay. There's not a single subject in the world that we study as part of our education. There is not a single profession in the world that, you know, guarantees, that tells us that this is exactly what you are. This is exactly what the goal and objective is. This is exactly what you can use in order to continue growing, moving toward that which guarantees freedom from all fears. All of wish to have freedom from all fears. And at anything that we are learning and we have learned, anything that we are doing and we are planning to do, decisively does not make us free from all fears. We know it. So, having an idea that has potential to help us attain freedom from all fears is to be used as anchor. And doing and using as anchor does not mean that you become frantic about it, crazy about it. No. It just not to run away too far from that anchor. That's all. We perform our actions while keeping ourselves at the center. That's all. That's called yoga stha. However, in practice, it has to be a little bit more precise than this general statement that I'm making. What could be that? So let's say you make your asana as a center of your life. Does asana has potential to make you completely free from all fears? Perhaps not. And yet, it has potential to help you build a foundation for that, a ground for that. Even that much quality is good enough quality for having asana as center of your life. Breathing exercises, or just an idea, a contemplative idea, that is, that I have more reasons to be grateful than to be a perpetual complainer. Delineate a list of goodness that has happened in your life. And whatever not so good has happened is always far more less than all the good things have happened. We have formed a habit, and ourselves, or somehow we tend to just remember only bad things, or we, our society, our culture, our system of education keeps reinforcing that you are abused and this and that and that and that. It goes on, you know, whether it is really correct or not correct, that is not the point. The thing is that how much can you fix? How much of the past can you fix? How much that past is really going to make any difference in the present in positively? And therefore, when you look at just only one problem, two problems, major ones have happened. But what about many, 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 many other things that had happened? They were so good. So this way, you select this idea of gratitude and make that idea center of your life. That becomes your anchor. Let your mind, you know, hang around it. Of course, it has to go there, be involved in everything that needs to be done, but make sure that once or twice a day, mind comes back to this ideal space or a space filled with these ideals. Which space that is filled with this potent element of gratitude. And let that mind get some rest from being close to this anchor point. That itself qualifies as yoga. Being established in this state of awareness is called being established in yoga. Then comes morning again. You can get out of that space, go and work, do everything that needs to be done. There will be extremes, there will be contrast, there will be something peaceful, something unpeaceful, something positive, something pleasant, something unpleasant. But again, at the end of the day, come back to that space again. Just by coming back to that space and being in that space for next few minutes, for next few hours, will give you strength to maintain that equanimity for many, many, many hours. We do 30 minutes of exercise, vigorous exercise, and the metabolic rate continues, you know, metabolic rate speeded up by that exercise continues even long after the exercise is finished. Even if your exercise is followed by relaxation, but amazing thing is your metabolism continues hours even after that. Opposite is also true. And let us use this example again, this gratitude, this space filled with gratitude. You came back to that space. First you started your day by being in that space. The next 8 hours and 10 hours, you are outside the range of that space. But the amazing thing is that effect of peacefulness that was accelerated, that was initiated, you know, at that time, that continues for many, many, many hours. At the end of the day, you come back to your home and again you enter that space. That will take you through your whole night. You will wake up with much more energized mind, clear mind. Your senses will be fully rested. Your limbs and organs will be very much rested. Your nervous system will be much more rested and energized. That's called yoga stha. While being established in the state of yoga, you perform your actions. As time passes, as your own study and practice improves, you may find much more potent yoga. Then use that yoga as your anchor point. 5 years later, 10 years later, as your knowledge expands, Your personality expands, your philosophy expands, your spiritual experience expands, and your maturity living in this world expands. You will find that something is more potent, yogic principle that deserves to be at the center of your life. So something that is at the center of your life, you do not need to really attend it for 5 hours, 10 hours, and in order to be so-called, you know, full-time practitioner, you do not need to spend 8 hours. No. It's your attitude and the constant awareness of that anchor that which makes you yogasthah, established in yoga. Yogasthah kuru karmani. Sangam tyaktva dhananjaya. Now I'm, you know, repeating the verse 40. Sangam tyaktva dhananjaya. O conqueror of wealth. Krishna is using very amazing term for Arjuna. Arjuna had many, many names. And this time, Krishna is precisely using a particular name for Arjuna, the person whom he is addressing. Dhananjaya. Dhanam means wealth, prosperity. Jaya means conqueror. O conqueror of wealth, it means, O great, conqueror of inner wealth, meaning he's reminding that our purpose of life, purpose of sadhana, purpose of being here is to discover and reclaim that inner wealth, which is innate. And that's what you are, Arjuna. And that is actually the constant awareness that we have to maintain. Here is how lucky I am. Just because I am born as a human, I am Dhananjaya. I have access to and mastery over infinite wealth of peace and happiness, fearlessness, self-confidence, self-trust, and unbreakable connection with my Creator. That is my innate wealth. And that is to be kept in my mind all the time. In the light of this awareness, all the losses and gains, all forms of success and failure, all forms of good and bad, all forms of honor and dishonor become irrelevant and virtually meaningless. And therefore, automatically, we let go everything that is happening around us, because we are so close to this understanding that in the light of, in the presence of this understanding, everything else becomes irrelevant. I was honored with such and such medal, great. I was awarded such and such great epithet, that's great. I lost such and such thing, that doesn't really matter, it's not a big thing. And all these losses and gains, anyway, one day they will be lost anyway with the death. But what I have found is so everlasting that it really doesn't matter. No. I have found this realization that what is really essential part of me and what is non-essential part of me. What is there that cannot be separated from me, and what is there that cannot be preserved forever? I have come to this realization, and I'm so glad that I have found motivation to maintain the constant awareness of this realization. As soon as this happens, we do not need to make an effort to practice non-attachment. Living in this world without any attachment, And still fully engaged in performing our actions becomes our essential nature. Effortlessly. So here, Yogastha Kuru Karmani Sangam Tyaktva Dhananjaya Siddhya Siddhyo Samobhutva Samattvam Yoga Uchyate. That is, Siddhya Siddhyo Samobhutva. And then Krishna is telling, O Arjuna, after that, it becomes extremely easy to be equal in success and achievement. Taking success and failure, pairs of opposite, in equal light, seeing these two from equal distance and not being affected by either, becomes our nature. And that is what is called samattvam yoga. That is actually now yoga, this is the state of yoga which we achieve by practicing yoga, regardless how small is our beginning, how humble is our beginning of the practice of yoga. But even that humble beginning of the practice of yoga eventually leads us to become fully established in the state of yoga, which is a state of equanimity, where loss and gain do not make much difference, but rather practice of non-attachment has become our essential nature, and we are fully aware of the reality within. But in the beginning, we have to make an effort before it becomes an integral part of us. And even once it has become an integral part of us, still it's very important to make an effort to embrace it consciously. Otherwise, our carelessness itself can put another veil. One more time it can put a veil, and thus even after knowing the truth, and even after realizing the truth, even after finding our connection with the higher reality, even after achieving that state of complete fearlessness, still we may revert to that primitive state, of our mind, where we have been drowning, in so many different forms of afflictions. So I thought that I will complete 5-6 verses today, but it's a good thing that we completed one and we did good job. So let's start from verse 19 next time. Thank you. God bless you.